CJRU, 1280 AM in Toronto.
In a world lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil for episode 154, broadcasting to you live on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto and streaming to you live on the web at songtalk.ca/livestream. Song Talk Radio is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. Brand new songwriters or established professionals, and on the show we share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we'll become a little bit better at writing songs. I'm your host, Neil Modi, and joining me tonight are the quote-unquote invested members of the Song Talk Radio
Action team. Feel a metaphor coming on.
We have Balance Sheet Bruce.
Balance Sheet Bruce here.
And filling in for Phil Emery tonight, we have Bailout Blair.
Bailout Blair Packham right here.
And handling our social media onslaught tonight, we have Variance Vanessa.
Variance. Is that a term in money
investments,
management?
Yes, right. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And last but not least, we have earnings estimate Eton.
Ah, very good. Yes, well, it's a money everybody. Night. It's I just watched a DVD last night about Too Big. It was called Too Big to Fail. It's an HBO show about that 2008, the fall of 2008.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It was a lousy Super film, covering. But really exciting time.
Is it a lousy film?
I didn't like it.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Okay.
So it's a documentary style.
Okay.
It's a docudrama.
Yeah.
But anyway.
There's another one called The Big Short that's supposed to be
That's a little more interesting.
Yeah.
It's more of a drama rather than a documentary.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So, yeah.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah. It's pretty imaginative stuff, yeah. Actually.
All right. So during the show, join in the conversation and send in your comments and questions to @songtalkradio on Twitter, and we'll share them in real time. And please stop by our website at songtalk.ca. Find out how you can be a guest on our show. And speaking of guests, Paul Voss was born in England, grew up in the Netherlands, traveled the world for business and pleasure, met his soon-to-be Canadian wife in Miami, got married in Las Vegas, and moved to Toronto just 2 years ago. Is your life story.
He's an international
agent of mystery. After hating the classical piano lessons at the age of 8, Paul grew up with jazz, soul, and funk, got into playing funk on the bass, dabbled in drums, and switched to guitar for the next 30 years. Lately, he's been getting into the singer-songwriter less is more thing, which he finds challenging. Paul is looking to hook up and form a near-acoustic duo to get more experience. Welcome to Song Talk Radio, Paul.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah.
Great.
Thank you. Awesome.
Are you going to be? Are your songs going to be a little funky tonight, do you think?
One of them is, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed a groove when I was listening there. So that's your funk
on.
Bass background, and your funk band and drums.
It is. It is. Actually, both songs have a dance background. Lost Along the Way, the acoustic one, started out as a drum and bass song.
Yeah.
But I bought this beautiful Gibson guitar, acoustic guitar in Phoenix, and I played the acoustic part of that drum and bass song, which is kind of like weird, but I did it anyway.
Sure.
And then it sounded so rich that I muted the drums and all the electronics around it, and I said, "Hey, this is really cool, right?" So that feeds into the less is more argument, right? So
right.
So that led me kind of like to explore local, open mic sessions, and you feel very exposed if you're an instrumentalist in a band, right? Or playing a bass guitar or drums or guitar. If you suddenly like only have your voice and your acoustic guitar to do at the same time.
Yeah, you can disappear in a band, or you can, you can hide out in a band a little bit, I imagine.
You can make the occasional mistake.
Exactly. It's safe, right? Yeah. So that's the first song. The second song actually has some pretty funky go-go style drums in it, which are very much, 80s. It was a very short-lived funk style, the go-go, inspired by that. And as I was talking earlier on to you, it's sometimes that, I see many songs are started with a vocal riff and a guitar, and that's exactly what I'm experimenting with. Right. But half of my songs start with a groove in my head, like I hear this kind of like mix between drums, bass, and horns and stuff like that. And it's just
isn't
this
that
mush.
Interesting? Well, that's your background then. You weren't a lyricist primarily at the start then.
No, we never have been actually.
Is it fairly recent, the lyricist work? Is that last couple of years?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Lost Along the Way is the first serious stab at songwriting. Actually, it was the first serious stab at creating a drum and bass song.
Uh-huh.
But it turned into this, right? Into an acoustic, acoustic songwriter song.
Well, that's wonderful because we love having a variety of guests here. So you're really at the beginning of your singer-songwriter career. In sense of writing lyrics, writing the music, and singing
exactly.
And things. So that's a wonderful place to be. So you'll get lots of feedback tonight. Mm-hmm. We may get some feedback from some of our listeners out there. Tips for the beginner, singer-songwriter. And I know what you mean about feeling exposed, though. I remember I played a couple open mics and they weren't listening. Mm-hmm. Like people were talking or drinking beer and chatting and all that. It was kind of a club where the owner just said, I want some music for background. And it was a bit disconcerting because I wanted to connect, right?
Yeah.
But then the next time I played a concert and they're all sitting there staring at me in silence. And I'm like, oh my God, I wish I was back at the bar.
Because
they're really listening now, right? You hear a pin drop. And it's a very different experience. And the same in these open mics. Yeah. Like, you're there, and it's, you know, it's exciting, too. Yeah.
In a band, you can, you know, you can just keep grooving. And as long as the band, they're paying attention. If you forget a lyric or something like that, you just keep playing. And you smile at each other. And then you come in, and the band knows where you are, and you just keep going. But if you do that, you can do that, of course, as a singer-songwriter. But, you know, everybody's still looking at you the whole time.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, you learn to fake it.
Like, yeah.
Because they don't know what... If they don't know what the lyrics are, you could sing anything.
You can sing anything and get away
with it. It doesn't matter,
right? Exactly. Oh, okay. So
there's no mistakes as long as they don't know what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and the other really fascinating thing about your background especially is that you, now you have this opportunity to do this really interesting intersection between groove and funk and jazz and the singer-songwriter thing, right? Which it actually, listening to your songs earlier, it actually sounds like you're doing.
Yeah,
you know, like you say, if you're starting with the groove, like most singer songwriters, like you say, start with the the chords and or the lyrics, or whatever. But no one, I mean, if Phil were here, he'd say he writes songs starting with the bass line. Which most singer songwriters, I don't think they.
No, I think that's pretty rare.
Yeah,
Paul Simon starts with a drum track apparently,
right?
Which is not.
He usually starts
rare.
With percussion, a beat.
He wants something really unusual happening. With
but
percussion.
But then when he actually starts creating something beyond that, it's probably lyric and melody, maybe even at the same time.
Yeah,
he starts just singing something. It seems. So.
Me, I start with lyrics because I was always a lyricist. My background is as a writer, so it's very unnatural for me. I've been experimenting trying to start with a riff or a hook or a lick or any of this stuff, and I just can't get it. So I think I'm going to collaborate with someone who's into that, and together we'll just play around on the guitar or piano or whatever and take it from there. But I want to hear about the Netherlands. Did you grow up there in your teen years, you mean? Or?
Yeah, exactly. I was actually was conceived in London, but before I was born, I came over to the Netherlands. Yeah, that explains a lot, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so you actually... Dutch, then. You're actually, most of your life was spent in the Netherlands. So you speak Dutch.
Oh, yeah, I speak Dutch fluently, though with a slight English accent, apparently. I've been here for 2 years, and my Dutch friends are already complaining, saying, like, hey, Paul, you're forgetting your mother tongue, which is obviously not my mother tongue, because I had an English mother and an English father, right?
Oh, they spoke English at home.
Yeah.
In Holland.
Yeah.
Oh, no kidding. So, So you learned Dutch in your surroundings in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
But at home, you spoke English.
Yes and no. If you guys go to Amsterdam now and you try to order a hamburger and you speak Dutch, they'll probably have the people, say, speaking English to you, because the Dutch are very good at their languages, right?
Distant relatives visit us from Amsterdam, and their English was perfect. Like, it was and then according to them, like most people over there do speak English.
You'd say probably 98%.
Yeah.
And probably 80% speak German. I speak German as well. Uh-huh. That's one thing I'm absolutely grateful but for the Dutch for, right? If I would have grown up in England, I would have probably speaking like English and maybe a quarter Dutch or something for another language.
Did it ever occur to you to write songs in other languages, or was English just kind of the go-to and that was it?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question.
That's interesting. There's this two movement. There's this pure movement in the Netherlands, which writes in the Dutch language, and there's some pretty songwriters with a very genuine leveraging what's good about the Dutch language in their song.
Yes,
but I mean. it's a different character language. It's a Germanic language, right? It has many words for cheese and grass and dikes and stuff like that, if you know what I mean.
But it's guttural, isn't it, in some ways?
Yeah, but, yeah, but some things don't translate, right? If you go to like a traditional like 80s kind of lyric, the fire, the burning in my heart and the fire in my sky, right?
Yeah.
If you do that in Dutch, it kind of gets like Germanic, it gets kind of like weird and descriptive, so you'd want to go somewhere else with that.
I think it also depends a lot on the individual. Like, even if you speak a different language, that doesn't necessarily mean you can write poetry in a different language, in that other language.
That's true.
You know what I mean? Like, if your strongest language is English, then when it comes to writing interesting lyrics, you're probably going to go to English.
Mm. Yes, yes. And there's another thing, and I hope my Dutch friends are not listening to this, guys. You'll hate me for this. But, there's a genre called science fiction, right? There's only been one Dutch writer ever who wrote science fiction.
Really?
Ever.
Really? A novelist, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
So that says something about Dutch culture. It's very much based in the here and now. It's not like, I don't believe in things that aren't true. Well, if you look at the more Anglo-Saxon kind of like, you have Asimov and you have all these great, like, well-renowned writers there, mm-hmm. right, in the English
literature. Saying that people in the Netherlands, watch out now, are you saying they're not as creative? Or imaginative?
That's what I'm looking at. That's what I'm trying to say.
I'm trying to get somebody to phone in. I'm trying to get the Twitter sphere going here.
Wow.
Okay, well...
They're more literal then. Literal and scientific. But so the songs, if you wrote a song in Dutch, would it be difficult for you, to express yourself? Is that what you're saying? It would be restrictive?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, you can try. You can try it out, right?
I could do that. But, you only reach a very small audience, right? You reach something like 17 million Dutch, maybe 8 million Belgians, and 12 million South Africans. They're the only people who in the world would make the head or tail of that. So,
yeah.
Right. I think English is like the de facto rock language, right? It's like pop and rock.
Well, that's just it. Like even people in other countries who don't speak English, they can sing along to English songs. They don't know what they're singing, but...
Yeah,
right.
Do you remember the dude from Spain that was in here?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he came in and he
said... Caceres.
Yeah. Daniel Caceres. We said, Daniel. We said, why... He's from Spain. He speaks Spanish, right? And he was here for a couple of years in Canada. Why are you writing in English? And he said, it's the language of song. It's so much... There's so much more for me in English. And he also said it put him in a different state of mind that removed him from his home language and his home country, that made him feel more imaginative. Mm-hmm. And his lyrics were really beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Huh.
Wow.
Well, interesting.
You've got a real multicultural thing happening there with the English and the Dutch and the now you're going to have an American wife.
No, she's Canadian.
Excuse me.
She's Canadian too.
Oh, she's Canadian.
She's very
Canadian.
She points that
she's
out.
She's adamant
right?
about that.
I mean, most Canadians do, right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
I'm learning that.
We're adamant about being Canadians, and we're sorry.
We're apologetic about it, too.
We're proud and we're sorry that we're Canadians.
Okay, so how about we hear a song?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, so, Paul, you brought in two recorded songs.
Yes.
And were these recorded in a pro studio or in your home studio?
In my home studio,
In home studio, excellent. Okay. Okay, so first one up is called Lost Along the Way. Do you want to preface it with what gives a little bit of what the song is about or where it came from?
Yeah, it's semi-autobiographical. I'd lived all my life in the Netherlands, right, and not in a very small area, smaller than the GTA. And for work, I would be traveling out to the U.S., sort of, to Thailand and to, do my work there. So I was becoming more like this kind of like IT gypsy, as it were. And I was kind of like disconnecting from my sense of home. And when I'd be homesick after 3 week stints in Japan, for instance, I'd go home. And then the homesickness kind of like went away. So I found myself in my life disconnecting from the Netherlands and finding it annoying that I had a house there. instead of great, right?
Right,
right.
Because it was tying me down. So when I met Catherine, my wife, right, at that time, we actually did an assignment together, but we were driving back from McAllen County in Texas to Houston to the airport. And it's a beautiful drive through the Texan countryside. And we don't just met each other, but we were talking with each other in the car, a four-hour car drive. And we were connecting, and that's something in part of the lyrics as well.
Okay.
It's a fictitious story of somebody who's minding his own business. He's not ready to get into a relationship. I was just coming out of a 17-year relationship, which just petered out. No drama, right? It just kind of like dissolved.
Mm.
Nothing spectacular going on there. But I thought, okay, if I'm single again, let's see what life has to offer. So it was never my intention, right, to to fall in love with my wife or stuff. Mm-hmm. But I found that kind of like, well, as I was talking to her and we were talking and connecting on a philosophical level and many levels, right, that I kind of like got this, hey, this is cool. This is, you know, and it's kind of like pinpointing the moment that you lose this sense of control I wanted to have over my own destiny. I don't want relationships. You know, I want to control. This is what I want to do. This rational plan. Mm-hmm. Finding it's kind of like losing traction with it, right? I'm losing that because
Your English romantic came out.
Maybe, yeah, if that's exactly it, right?
Yeah. Let's have a listen.
Okay, let's have a listen.
Distance, I hope it lasts eternally. I say what I am feeling. Would you go or would you stay? Life and nights connecting before we quickly turn away. Don't wanna reach a destination, afraid the magic will be lost. Please continue conversation. We'll both pretend there's nothing at all cost. It was never in the screenplay. This was not supposed to be. The innocence of blame. Now turns out seriously. We got lost along the way. Now I don't want to refine it. I fear to break the spell. All the sweet and spoken silence. Got lost along the way. Face the consequence of feeling lost along the way. Last moments that we're stealing. The storm ahead is clearing, the rain receding fast. Wash away that was, letting go what's in the past. Safety in a small talk, no spoiling what could be. In a state of the denial, time is running out on me. Don't wanna reach a destination, afraid the magic will be lost. Please continue conversation, we'll both pretend there's nothing. Cause it was never in the screenplay. This was not supposed to be. The innocence of blame. Now turns out seriously. We got lost along the way. Now I don't want to refine it. I fear to break the spell. All the sweet and spoken silence. Got lost along the way. Face the consequence of feeling lost along the way. Last moments that we're stealing. Lost along the way. Now I don't want to refine it. I fear to break the spell. All the sweet and spoken silence. Got lost along the way. Face the consequence of feeling lost along the way. Last moment that we're stealing.
Yeah.
All
right.
Wow.
Beautiful song.
It was Lost Along the Way by Paul Voss. And you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce Neal and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. And it's Bruce Neal and Blair tonight. filling in for Phil.
So, Blair, if you're going to fill in for Phil, at some point in the show you have to say, Bruce, I disagree with that.
I'll do that.
Just to keep the spirit of Phil in the house.
Yeah.
That was a beautiful.
If you like, you can actually disagree with that.
Yeah,
I disagree with that, Bruce.
Thank you. That's good.
There we go. That's
Paul, I love that song. You know, the guitar work is beautiful off the top there. The strumming with the little light touch on top. You were talking about, you know, you're a little self-conscious about your playing. I mean, if you play that well live, you're fine.
Okay.
But I can see wanting to. I just loved it. I really loved that you did a pre-chorus. I really like the – to me, songs are all about the tension and release. The expected and the unexpected, the push and the pull. And in that way, they're like life and like relationships, right? We pull in close and we push away and we're in that dance all the time, right? So you built this tension and you also did some really cool things with your voice. So I thought you sounded like Bowie a bit in the pre-chorus because it was just right out there like that, you know. And it was great. And for a very reserved type man, when you're performing, it's like, wow, it's like really out there and strong and visceral, very, very wonderful. Oh. And I loved your 80s style of your Bee Gees vocals happening there and that kind of wash. Strong, the way there was this kind of wash. Yeah. It felt very 80s to me, that style of that, but it was mixed in with all this. And the only thing, because we give feedback on this show, right?
Yeah.
The only thing I would do is I wouldn't repeat the same pre-chorus the second time, and I would cut it in half too. So I would say go back and have a pre-chorus that moves the story along a bit on the second pre-chorus rather than just repeating it, because then you've got a repeated chorus and a repeated pre-chorus. So you've got three-quarters of the song repeated exactly the same, which isn't wrong for a pop song, but I think you're aspiring to something a little more movement than that and texture. So what I would say is it would come out of verse two, go into a half pre-chorus and right into the chorus because we're ready, but change up the lyric just a little bit. It could use, in my humble opinion, it could use a bridge, like an instrumental or a vocal ooh-ah, or maybe like an 80s synth thing that's happening for a short instrumental bridge, maybe 8 bars or something. Well, just as a break from the song and do a turnaround, maybe down to zero and then back up again. Anyway, I loved it. Over to you. Over to you, Blair.
Over to you, Blair. What do you think, Blair?
Go ahead. So I really like what you're saying, and actually, a lot of what you're saying is in the dubstep version, right? Which is like a souped-up like pop song. So I hear what you're saying, right? Mm-hmm. It has a poppy thing, and in pop, it's all about the length of the song and the ability to dance to it, right? Mm-hmm. So I really realized I stripped out all the dance, and then you just focused in, like, say, now the story has to be told, right? It's more about the story and less about the groove. So,
well, the lyrics are taking very cool. The lyrics are taking some responsibility.
They're taking focus, Blair? For sure. Bruce, I disagree.
Oh, good.
No, it's not true. I agree with a lot of what you said. Now, Paul, I don't know. When I appeared on this show the very first time doing my own songs, I didn't actually know that they gave feedback on the songs, so I was a little taken aback by the amount of
and as I recall, Blair, you actually took our suggestion on the spot with your guitar and implemented it and liked it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's true.
Yeah. It's a quick convert.
Yeah. No.
Hand me a guitar. I'll go for it too.
But it is like a feature of when I hear songs, because I teach songwriting and stuff, I my brain immediately goes into critique mode, which is kind of a drag. Like, because it could be a David Bowie song, and I'm thinking, you shouldn't have done that, you know, that pre-chorus twice or whatever. It doesn't matter how great the song is or the person, I will immediately start thinking, what can we change, you know? So hearing what Bruce had to say, I agree with a lot of what you said. I too felt like a bridge would be nice, but really it doesn't have to be much. I mean, it's really going somewhere other than those main chords that you're using.
Mm-hmm. What chords are you using? What key is it in?
What key are you in? You remember?
Since my classical piano lessons, I've rarely had to think. I think it starts in A, G, F.
Okay.
That sounds right.
A, G, F.
It was composed on the guitar, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But descending, like A minor, G, F. If there was something that was just B flat or a C or something, like just something different, don't even need to write lyrics for it. You could just have it go for, you know, Motown songs often on their bridges were often just like new chords for four bars, and then they'd go back to the song.
Yeah.
And it actually worked because it's a breath of fresh air. So I agree with that idea. And cutting the second B verse in half, or pre-chorus in half, I agree with that as well. Mm-hmm. Although I tend to think that you could just go to "It was never in the screenplay, that was not supposed to be," mm-hmm. And go from there into the chorus. But other than that, mm-hmm. I've heard this song now several times, and I really enjoyed it, and more each time, which is telling, because sometimes it goes the other way.
That's a good sign. Yeah.
But because of my critique mode, I'm going to go kind of granular at this point.
Good.
You're describing the road going on for hours in the moment. You're staring into the distance. And then you go sort of... I would keep it in the present. If I say what I'm feeling, will you go or will you stay? It sort of keeps it in the moment. And therefore, for me, it keeps it really active rather than putting in your head. It keeps it in the car. And there's a few other things like that. I mean, it's a really minor point in a way, but it's kind of major in another way. There's a few other points like that where I feel like it needs to stay in the car, as it were. Now here's one that you'll find really annoying. The chorus, "Lost along the way, we got lost along the way. Now I don't want to re-find it." And I think when you sing it, when I heard it without the benefit of the lyric sheet the first time, I thought, refine it.
Oh,
yeah, so there's that. And I also think, what's it? Like, I know what you mean because you've explained it, but I didn't know at the time. Sorry, were you prepared for all this critique?
He actually listened to the show.
This is what I'm here for, right?
So I would find another way to say that personally. If you and I were co-writing, I would say, "Hey, Paul, can we try we got lost along the way, blah, 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 and then lost to, I fear to break the spell of this, blah, 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 nah, nah." Because if you change refined it, you're going to have to change the rhyme word, which is silence. But I do feel that right away in the chorus, if you're already maybe confusing people with the sound of the word, that's probably a bad idea. Yeah. You can do it later in the chorus, but if you do it in the very first line, it's risky.
I had one little nit. I think it's an English slip that you may not be aware of. "The storm ahead is clearing, the rain receding fast. Wash away that was." And you actually sang "that was." "Wash away what was," I think, is what you want to say. "What used to be," is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
Wash away what was, letting go what's in the past. So it's not that.
But okay.
You'll hear back on the iPod and... The iPod. What's it called? Podcast.
The podcast.
We record this, Paul, so you can have this at home and listen to it over and over and hear Blair's wisdom over and over and over again. Neil, what did you think?
I absolutely love it. I agree with a lot of what both Bruce, you and you, Blair, are saying. I kind of thought my first inclination for the pre-chorus was, if you want to do the easy thing, just do, like right now you've got... the pre-chorus sort of has two halves. Do the first half the first time and do the second half the second time.
That's a good idea.
Right?
Right?
And just
economy.
Just split it in half and
so
you're done.
That
right?
out here.
Yeah.
See, that's a drummer speaking.
Yeah, absolutely.
It gets you to the chorus faster. Which is generally a good thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Not always, but generally. Yeah.
It's that tension. How much tension? How much you want to make them wait?
The other thing I want to point out in terms of praise is the melodies are really gorgeous.
Very strong.
The melodies are really, really strong.
Yeah.
And they have an amazing kind of curve to them. You know, like they go up, they go down, they resolve nicely. Even with the lyric and everything, like I think that's really the thing that kind of impressed me the most about this is that the melodies are still stuck in my head.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
Really gorgeous stuff. When you perform this live, how do you do the chorus? Because you've got this sort of double line thing going on in the recording.
If you perform it live, the
background vocals and things.
Well, that's the thing about my songwriting. You also hear it in the other one. It's like I think up for my song, then I sing it, right? And then, but I'm doing this, performing this at home, right, in the studios under controlled circumstances. I do all my instruments, all the drums and stuff like that.
I mean, you have the ability to double track and overdub and all that stuff.
But what I've learned from one of your former guests or one of the persons who were there, who I hooked up with, he said, "Yeah, this is these versions are just starting points." right? So they start to grow when you do them live. So to your point, yeah. I haven't done this one live yet. Right.
It's something to think about.
Yes. Yeah, so that's why I'd like to hook up with a like-minded singer-songwriter, right? Because I was blown away in Phoenix once when I saw two country and western guitarists, right? Mm-hmm. Acoustic guitarists with cowboy hats and all, right? I don't like country and western music that much. I didn't grow up with it. But they were playing pop songs and all kinds of stuff you shouldn't be able to do. But they could, with two acoustic guitars and two voices, they could play pretty much anything up to dance music, right. Funk, okay. Rock. They could, and mm-hmm. they were not doing classical rock at all. But I was just right. astounded by the versatility. So I would really like to... Because this guitar part is slightly difficult.
Yes.
If I focus too much on the guitar, right, I lose my sing. So I have to practice this more, I guess, and make it my own, right?
Okay. I think Bruce has something to say.
Well, for those just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto, and it's raining. And we're streaming live on songtalk.ca/live-stream. Tonight our guest is Paul Voss via England, Netherlands, and
Canada,
and all kinds of places, and now in Canada. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so tweet your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio or email us at feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll share your thoughts in real time. And you can find links to all the products, the books, the web services we mention on Song Talk Radio. They're all on our resources page at songtalk.ca. Surprise, /resources. There you go. And coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have January 17th, Kirk Felix, January 24th, Ashley Braga, and January 31st, Louis Moon. It's going to be a multicultural month, you know.
Oh, is it?
Louis from Korea, I think.
Oh, right. He was at the meetup.
Yeah, and Ashley Braga is from Bragaland. She sounds like she's Spanish. Somewhere Spanish. And if you're in the Toronto area, and you may want to do this, Paul, join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup on Sunday, January 22nd from 1 to 4 at the Transat Club. You could play this tune we just heard on your guitar. Give it a try with a friendly audience, right?
Nurturing
audience. And it's free to attend the roundtable. You just go to meetup.com, you know, roundtable, Songwriters Roundtable. Sign up. Tell us you're coming. And you can also go directly to songtalk.ca/meetup for all the juicy details. Back to you, Neil. And Blair has
his hand up. Yes,
I have
Blair.
A question. Yeah, I just
yes, Blair.
I don't know what the protocol is, so I put my hand up.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm just curious about the meetup because it sounds like fun. How many people do you generally get out? How many meetups have you had? And
it's been going on for a few years.
12 years. There was a bit of a lull in like 2011, 12, but then it picked up again when Phil, Bruce, and I and Eric actually started hosting it.
Great.
That was 4 years ago.
That was like 4 years ago. So yeah.
And how well populated is it?
It really depends. I mean, last time we had it in December, there was a snowstorm, so we had like 12 people.
Right.
And then the month before that, we had like 40.
That's fantastic.
And we usually have about 20. We have 12 spots for 12 singers to sing one song. They each get 10 minutes. So you sing the tune, and then the whole audience gives feedback.
Yeah.
And
Or you play a recording.
We facilitate a recording. A lot of people come in with just a little MP3 of something they've done at their home studio. And such a wide variety of music. You never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah, it's once a month. Every month. Either a Sunday afternoon or a Wednesday or Thursday evening.
Oh, it sounds terrific. I will attend.
You should definitely check it out. So speaking of things going on in Toronto, the sad news this week is the demise of Hughes Room.
Yes.
And in case you haven't heard, they kind of ran out of money. And Blair, you've actually played there before, have you?
A bunch of times, many times over the last 15 years or so.
Right.
And it's a wonderful place to play, and it's going to be sorely missed if in fact. I mean, right now they're teetering. I think they've announced that they're having serious financial trouble, and if they don't fix it, they won't be able to stay open.
Yeah. The owner was saying something about maybe turning it into a nonprofit organization. Which is similar to what the Transact does, I think.
I mean, Music Career, that's a nonprofit
endeavor
anyway.
Fair enough.
For most. It is for me, so more or less. So, fingers crossed that they are able to turn it into something.
Yeah, yeah. Because as I understand it, it's one of the only sort of medium-sized venues in the city.
What would it be, 100
seats? It's like 200 plus
210,
people.
Something like that.
But everything else tends to be really, really small or really gigantic.
Well, and everything else has a different purpose. This is an important thing to note, that there are sports bars and there There are bars where, you know, that feature karaoke, and there are bars that feature rock bands and stuff like that. This is a bar that's purely for music, and the staff is encouraged to not talk during the performances
and maybe not even take orders.
Yeah, and the audience is definitely encouraged to not talk. And so when you go in, if you're not used to that kind of thing, if you're used to hearing music like cover bands in a pub somewhere, being at Hugh's Room can be a bit of a culture shock. But it's
more
fantastic.
I think of it more as a performance space, because there's clearly a stage.
Yes.
Clearly the start of a show.
And the acoustics are great, too.
And it's got a great sound system.
Yeah.
And, I hope they can make something out of it. I know that it's hard. I had a theater way back in the 70s, and I know that under 200 was really hard to make it work, because you got your ticket price.
Yeah.
And then you got your talent, and you got the venue, and you do the math, and you go, okay, I can't charge $500 a ticket unless Springsteen drops by, right? So it's going to be like 20 or 30 if I can get that. Mm-hmm. And you just do the math, and you can't really make a profit. It's hard to make a profit.
Well, and the tough thing in the case of Hugh's Room, is that they most of the ticket price goes to the artist. So, which is great for the artist, but it's not so good for Hugh's Room.
They're taking the food, and there's not much margin there.
Yeah.
They have a nice dinner.
They have a nice menu.
But let's send out our good wishes to Hugh's Room some angel investor comes along and says, let's make this happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so before we took a break, so something you just touched on, Paul, before we took the break, we've heard the phrase, or we've heard the saying before, that, you know, a good song should stand on its own, just a vocal and just one instrument, right?
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like you hear things, as very much I do as well, because I'm a producer as well.
Mm-hmm.
You hear things in layers. So you hear you need the backup singers in there. You need the extra. You know, if you're doing dubstep, for sure, you need the beat, you need the bass line, you need...
Yeah.
And all those things are just as essential to the song as the melody, the chords, and the singing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine Another One Bites the Dust?
Only with a guitar and
a vocals, right?
Yeah.
So I think it would work one way or another, but, you know, that song is very groove-oriented. Like many dance... My roots are in dance, right? In black soul and that kind of stuff. So if you just look at an average funk song, right, versus an average rock song, right? And rock song is mostly the guitar chords are dominating, right? Are defining what the song is about.
Yeah, the riff.
And really, the bass guitarist is following the root note, in most cases, of the guitar chord, right? It's very subservient to the not I'm saying that's bad, because I love some rock, right? I've really inspiring rock bands. But if you look at funk music, it's kind of like the opposite. It's the bass, which is kind of with the drums. The drums is pretty much doing a very basic beat.
Yeah.
But the bass is giving it kind of like a 16th character to it. Like if you use, for instance, the band Chic as an example, with some amazing songwriters. And the guitarist is really... every instrument is really an extension of the drum beat.
Of the rhythm.
Yeah, so the guitar is the chord is playing. It's like more. It's more like the chink-a-chick, chick-a-chick.
Yeah,
that's down, up and down. So it's more important than the chord they're actually playing.
Well, Paul, when you perform live, though, you could take a track with you. There's nothing wrong with having a drum track to play to. It's not thought as karaoke at all. In fact, a lot of people do looping. Do you know looping, guitar looping?
The next song you're hearing. Yeah. I started out without the drum track. I started out as with a loop.
Yeah.
People do
that live, right? They'll lay the loop down and they'll play against it. So they get another texture and layer in there.
As well,
it's all kinds of ways to do it. We'll talk. Yeah. Why don't we hear another song, though?
Let's hear another song, yes.
Yeah.
I'll meet you there. Oh, now the winter is over. The coffee shop that overlooks the park. Oh yeah. Now the winter is over. You know we can make it before dark. Oh yeah. I'll come for you.
Okay, that was Heaven in My Hands.
Yeah, all right. Great tune.
Heaven in My Hands by Paul Voss, and you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto.
Blair,
what do you think of that song?
Blair, give it to us.
All right.
Tell us what you liked first.
I will. Okay. I liked a lot. I liked the groove a lot. It was funny to see you guys dancing. I didn't want to get up and dance, but watching you guys was really exciting.
And
actually,
I couldn't really keep my clothes on when I started dancing.
Yeah, and that was the part that disturbed me.
Yeah, it was disturbing.
Yeah.
The table will never be the same.
I should have shaved my chest.
Yeah. Again.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed the groove and the track. You know, the drum programming is did you program those drums? Yeah. Like, it doesn't sound like a drum machine, except that I'm assuming that it was because you said you did it at home. So
yeah. So yeah, what I do is I have pads.
Okay.
And I kind of like
tap it in.
And I construct it that way.
Right. It's beautiful. Yeah, yeah. It's so really great parts. Yeah, it sounds
you're
very
a drummer.
Very natural and very.
Well, I have to because my dad is a jazz drummer, and they're always in shuffles, right?
It's in your blood,
right?
If I'd do a poor job on the track, he'd have to call me up and sort me out, right?
He'd have something to say about it, right? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. And the melody is catchy as well. The singing is terrific, and I love that thing that that same thing happened that Bruce Bruce mentioned earlier, where you sort of change voices, and in the pre-chorus, Bruce thought that it sounded like David Bowie, in the sense that it was just a different character, and I like that. You don't hear that very often in a lot of people's songs, so that's refreshing. So that's a cool thing. I really liked Now Winter Is Over, and I call, and then you say something, then you go, Now Winter Is Over again, and you say it four times in the first verse, and that's it's a motif, right? It becomes a thing that is a repeated thing that the listener comes to expect. Mm-hmm. And it's then an in anchor. The next verse you do, Now the Summer Is Over, and the listener comes to expect it as well. So it's like it seems to me that a songwriter, it walks a line between being fresh and being familiar. Mm-hmm. Right, and so if you set up some patterns that the listener is going to expect, and then you deviate from the patterns, that sort of can be delightful, right? And it works, really works. The only thing is that then the completist in me is like, what about spring and fall? There's that, awesome. and then the other thing too is I look for things that make sense or maybe don't make sense in a lyric much more than I probably should, because I don't think the average listener cares, but I will look for something. Like I wrote in a song once that you turned me around. You turned me around 360 degrees in your direction, and somebody pointed out to me that just means you turned it right around exactly. Mm-hmm. And I wish just that 360 degrees sang really well. So that's what I wrote. Yeah. And so I look for stuff like that in other people's songs now, having learned that lesson. And so I'm thinking, wow, you're going to meet in the. And this is a long day. You're going to make it before dark. It just started to make, I'm at that point, it sort of got my brain going where I'm looking for inconsistencies or whatever. And then I'm thinking, it isn't really. It's pretty consistent, actually. I think so. But like that was one that made me think, just because it rhymes with park, and then I'm thinking, okay, dark, does it, like, So the verse, folks, in case you weren't paying attention, is Now the winter is over, the coffee shop that overlooks the park. Now the winter is over. You know we can make it before dark. And I'm thinking, it's dark in there already? Just to rhyme with park. And it's already dark. In other words, it's causing me to think about what the lyric is rather than just enjoy it. So then it also makes my brain in that mode then question everything else. And so we get to the chorus, which is because I got heaven in my hands, and I'm thinking, okay, so if Paul were telling me this story as opposed to a song, and he were to say, heaven in my hands, I would have all kinds of images as to what exactly he's referring to in this situation. And I won't tell you what one of them was. But I thought, like, I've got heaven in my hands. Has he got, like, a gram of Coke? I'm trying to figure out, what is heaven in his hands?
You nailed it. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah.
And I know that's not what it is. But I'm trying to think, like, what could it be that's in his hands? And I'm assuming that what it really means is heaven in my hands. It's a metaphor for the relationship. But I'm questioning it, and I don't like to question it. Yeah. I'd rather just experience it. So I don't know if anybody else shares that, or if I'm just an over-analytical idiot.
I can do that sometimes, and more often, or lately more often than before. But before I started doing this show and coming to the Songwriters Meetup, I didn't care for the lyrics. Like, it's a nice melody. It's got some words that rhyme. I'm happy.
Right.
I didn't dissect it to the point where does it make sense? Does it not make sense? Most of the time, it didn't anyway.
I think most people are like that anyway. Yeah. But unfortunately people, for me, that's my thing.
A lot of people write on purpose. I was listening to a songwriter on the CBC today said they write on purpose to be ambiguous. Whoa. They do not want to spell it out. They want mystery, and they want to make people try to put in their own story, right? Yeah. So there again, it's a balance between how much you're going to give them and how much you're not going to give them. I thought you've got a great song and a great groove here. And again, it's the same issue as last time. I'm gonna venture out to say that you're a bit lazy in your writing, your lyric writing. You're repeating too much, right? And I've been there. Like I'm kind of winding and going, I don't know what else to say. Well, I'll just repeat that, right? Because it's good. It's strong, right? So I think if I was collaborating with you, I would say, first of all, that we do the same thing as in the last song. Like, I like that your first pre-chorus is short. I wouldn't repeat those lyrics at all. In the second pre-chorus, I do the second half, right? Whatever, keep it short. I also would not go back to pre-chorus 3.
Yeah.
Because you did. I saw your face. You're going, oh, we're going to get it now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Because we've really heard that enough, right? I have, anyway.
At that point, I thought the song was done.
Yeah, me too.
It could have been, right?
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with a 3-minute song, you know what I mean? Like,
no, but it has to have something to say, right?
Yeah, and if you want to aspire to great songwriting, a song that will be a standard 100 years from now, you write something that is so compelling and is a complete story and connects with someone emotionally, right? You can throw off a song like this, and the people listen and they'll love it, and they'll dance. But if you want a song to last, it does really need to have integrity and hold together, and it's rare to get a song like that. I agree with Blair, not on the lyrics, Heaven in My Hands, as being an image, I'm not sure what it is, but that you weren't as musically interesting, lyrically interesting, or chord interesting in the chorus.
Well, I thought the chords went back to the same chords as the verse.
It's like that loop. Paul, for me, when you go to the chorus, it's like we're setting the foundation with the verse. We're walking up the stairs with the pre-chorus. And now we're going to have a chorus. And even if it's pretty and legato and everything, it's got to be, oh, thank God we're here and
it's
glorious. And it's a release, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But this Heaven in My Hands, I've got Heaven in My Hands. It sounded like the background singers, not like what you could really be delivering there. So I would go to some chord substitutions or onto chords we haven't heard. I would be more melodically daring in the chorus, all over the place. I would use a combo of your Bowie voice, I call it, in the pre-chorus, and your regular Paul Voss voice at the start. I'm not sure, but the jury's out in my mind about changing the style of your voice in a song, because it sounds like it's two different singers. I think you have a great deal of versatility to do different styles of songs, but it really sounded like somebody else, and I wasn't sure why that new character came, and that was my only mystery there. And that can remain a mystery, that's fine.
Right, generally I would agree with you.
Let's hear from Neil.
Those are interesting comments. I mean,
I disagree, Neil.
Yeah.
Thank you, Phil.
Good. I disagree too. I don't know with what, but I disagree.
You disagree with yourself.
I actually really did like the transition from the pre-chorus to the chorus, and I thought like you selected a couple different chords there going out of the pre-chorus, and then when the chorus hit, I was like, oh, okay, but this sort of sounds like the verse. So I would tend to agree with what
You're
Bruce is saying.
Yeah. Right?
Something there is kind of missing. That being said, I didn't really mind the chorus the way it was. You did play with the melody on the fourth time. Who was that singer songwriter? Jordan Paul, who was in a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
He had a chorus that was one word. I forget what the word was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He had a chorus that was one word, and he repeated it five times in the chorus. There were at least four or five different chords under each word. The melody changed with each word,
with each repetition
of the word. So, I mean, basically what I'm saying is that, like, when he did it, there wasn't much interest in the way of lyrical storytelling.
So if you're going to be lazy,
my version of Neil is
if you're going to be lazy in the writing, you have to get real busy in the underneath.
In something else, right?
Yeah,
in that instance, there was interest in melody, there was interest in harmony.
Yeah,
right. Because basically, you've got melody, lyric, and harmony.
Yeah.
Right at the very basic. Yeah. So you went back in the chorus
and rhythm.
So in the chorus you went back to a harmony that we've heard before, and you went back to a lyric that we heard four times that was okay. Repetitious, right? So, I mean, it doesn't mean that it has to be radically different, but one additional element has to change.
Yeah,
I think.
Well,
and
it's better if it does. Yeah,
whether it's just chord or whether it's something else.
In the words of the great David Bowie, changes the changes. Yeah, to me, a song is all about listening for the changes. Right? It's same in a story. If I'm reading a novel, I want something to change, to move, right? And people respond viscerally to change. They can't tell you whether it was a pre-chorus, the average person. They don't know from whether it's a B-flat minor or whether you're going to. It doesn't matter. What they hear is the change. And that change within a song gets people excited. And they want to hear it again, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been listening to a lot of the modern stuff where they've got, like, Skrillex has done a thing that sounds halfway between an animal and an instrument, you know. But the thing is, it's entertaining, and it's surprising, and it comes in at a time where the song suddenly shifts, and you go, what the hell was that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And can I say that before 9 o'clock?
Yeah, absolutely.
What the hell was that? CRTC. So that's what I would encourage you to do, is if you're going to collaborate, I would love to collaborate with you. I'll say that right now. And I'm sure lots of people at the Songwriters Cafe that come out on the Sunday would, because your stuff is really, really good. And to the next level would be, say, someone who's a lyricist or someone's done a lot of story songwriting where they've had beginning, middle, and end and know how to make the story move and pay off, right?
And this is really, I mean, I think basically what we're saying is that there's a lot of really great pieces. I think it's in the overall structure and the overall kind of, not even the production, but yeah, it's just basically the overall structure that maybe needs a little bit of, you know, shaving here and tweaking there and a little bit of difference there, and then you're golden, you know?
Yeah. I do think that looking for a collaborator is a really, really good idea. Great idea, actually.
Yeah.
And I think looking for
a producer.
Or producer, but a collaborator who's also a producer, but somebody who complements your strengths, who maybe doesn't have your strengths, but has other things that you need. I think it's a great thing to do. It's rather than we tend to be drawn to people who can do similar things that we can do and maybe do them better, maybe do them worse.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably foolish. It's probably better to collaborate with people
who don't play guitar very well.
Yeah.
I don't play very good.
That's
guitar,
why
I've never lived in the Netherlands, for example. That's very different.
That's why Bruce is perfect.
I'm perfect, really. And I've focused on lyrics my whole life, but not on rhythm. So you bring this really strong rhythm. And I was thinking about soul music, whatever you called it, black. When you were growing up, you were really drawn to black music, black American music, right? And those little phrases after
great.
I figured out long ago, all you have to do to get that style is say "oh yeah" or "ooh." Like, listen to Aretha. And all those people, it's like they're just singing out, and it's not lyrical. It's lyrical. It's not lyrics, though, right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, they just do it so beautifully, but it's all over the scale, and you know, like Aretha can scream like against a B flat chord, and I don't care. It just sounds so entertaining, right?
You should work with Aretha.
Aretha,
sign
me up.
She doesn't like to travel.
It is absolutely true. I mean, I mean, my strengths are the same as yours. Actually, they're in riffs, chords, and beat and rhythm.
I
tend, if I'm going to collaborate with someone, I want someone who's good at lyrics. I want someone who can whip off lyrics fast and can sing a melody, and we work together, and boom. Because then you're not walking over each other's toes, but you're each working to your strengths, and everything's great.
And we're almost out of time, because I just heard the theme music come in. Was that Phil's rock song?
The band has arrived.
The band is here.
Okay, so that is
thank
about
you.
Time.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you, Blair, for coming in tonight.
My pleasure. What a fun
on
time.
The show. And so this has been Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. Thank you to our guest, Paul Voss. Is there some place online where you have your stuff available for people to listen to?
Yeah, I've got my SoundCloud and stuff like that. So you should have that link. Is that something that you could...
We'll link to that on our page, because you provided that to us. But just just search Paul Voss on SoundCloud, you'll find it.
Yeah.
Voss with one S, right?
V-O-S.
Yeah. You search for Sumo Baby Shower. That's my
Sumo
pseudonym.
Baby Shower. That would have been my next guess.
Yeah, Sumo,
Sumo Baby Shower. Yeah, okay, we won't ask.
That's the name of the band.
All right.
Okay. Everyone in listener land, please send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the site at songtalk.ca. Subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes at songtalk.ca/iTunes, and don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on the show at our resources page, songtalk.ca/resources. And if you're in the Toronto area, once again, please join us for the next Songwriters Roundtable Meetup. It's on Sunday, January the 22nd, 2017, from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transat Club. That's in the annex near Bloor and Spadina.
Yes, near the newly renovated Brunswick Tavern. You should see it's beautiful. They've repainted all the outside. It's a mystery. Somebody said it might be a Boston Pizza.
Oh no.
But, you know, it's beautiful. It's right at Brunswick and Bloor, and that's where the Transact is.
Yeah, just
right
down there, the street on Brunswick.
Down the street there. Yeah.
Okay, and it's free to join on Meetup and free to attend the round table. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the details. We'd like to thank CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto for putting up with all our shenanigans.
What shenanigans? There were no shenanigans.
Sure there were.
Oh.
Especially the station's technical officer. Let's wait till after the show. Michael Newton, technical officer, and program director Alyssa Matthews. We'd like to thank Vanessa Vreeland for so deftly handling our social
thank
media channels.
Thank you, Vanessa, the Tweety Bird.
And thanks to Eitan Ryan for doing our tech tonight.
She's on the board. All the way from Ireland. From Dublin.
And thank you to our home listeners, or even if you're not at home, it could be anywhere.
Yeah, you could be.
And if you're on Twitter, you can follow Bruce.
Don't follow me.
Don't follow Bruce?
No. It makes me nervous.
He's getting a twitch in his neck from looking over his shoulder constantly. Blair, you can
at
follow.
Blair Packham.
At Blair Packham. And you got a website too,
Blair Packham? I do, BlairPackham.com.
Go figure. And you can follow Vanessa at Sunny_Vanessa. She's over in the other room.
Sunny_Vanessa.
And Eitan.
At Tawny_R.
And Paul, are you on Twitter?
I am.
What's your Twitter account?
Paul_Voss, apparently.
Thank you, Vanessa.
Yeah. Vanessa, I have to find that
Thanks
one.
Thanks for helping me out there.
And please stop by our website, songtalk.ca, browse past shows, and find out how you can be guests on the show. That's all, folks. Tune in next week, same song time, same song channel.
And we're off to the Imperial Pub.
Good night.
Good night.
Keep on writing.